Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
You're never going to go through that life of success after success. So don't be swinging from a chandelier with a bottle of champagne and a big cigar when you're doing well.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent and personal development. My name's Coach Yas and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach developer and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and today I'm joined by a very special guest. I've got Simon Grayson with me, former Blackpool, Leeds and Sunderland manager, and a range of other clubs too. Good morning, Simon. How are you?
Yeah, good, fine. Thank you. Yourself?
Very well this morning. A little bit tired, but looking forward to this conversation. Don't want to waste any time, so I just want to get straight into the heart of it. How did you get started with your coaching journey?
It was coming to the back end of my playing career, really. I was doing my badges from when I was about 30, 31 years old. Went on the courses that the PFA, the Union for the Footballers, do for us. And then I got to sort of the age where I was about 33, still playing at Blackpool in the first team, and I got offered to take the reserves. And carry playing, so that like combined role. Even on my days off when I was doing my badges, I would go into Blackburn's Academy and have a day doing learning from some of the coaches, taking a few sessions. And it's funny when you look back on the people that were actually there at that time, that people like Junior Hoylett, Jonathan Walters, Alex Bruce, and people like that have all come through to have good careers. So the experience of learning while I was still playing was really good.
And just, you know, just curious, within that time frame, obviously, you know, learning while you're still playing, what were some of the key things that you started to develop as part of your own philosophy? And, you know, I'm sure you know, having gone through a playing career, maybe working under different managers and coaches, there were some key bits that you really started to maybe attach yourself to before you actually came into management full time.
Yeah, I think probably the sessions that you put on throughout every day, from being a player, you didn't really probably analyse things too much, why they were being done, were there anything to do with the weekend's game previously or coming up to improve technically and tactically. So it was more about getting a variation of different types of sessions, learning the planners, and ultimately then looking into the bigger picture of what makes players tick. I think I was always looking at that, what managers got the best out of me and how they sort of implemented their ideas. And so it was the social skills, the man management skills that you sort of start looking into. And I think you go then, once you get onto your courses, a little bit more detail, it's more about maybe other signs of like psychology and nutrition and fitness and things like that.
You know, you talk there, obviously, you're doing towards the back end of your playing career, starting to get involved in a bit of the coaching side of stuff. Eventually, you know, after playing for a range of different clubs, you've obviously ended your career at Blackpool and then gone into your first managerial job by taking them over when you eventually hung up your boots. How did that come along? You know, was that just for you, or
Well, it was quite weird, really, because I'd been offered an assistant manager's job at another club, and I went to Colin Hendry and asked him if it was all right if I could pack in playing and leave, and he said yes. The team were probably about halfway in the division at the time, but then I went to the owner, Carl Oyston, to reaffirm it with him, and he said no, because he was going to get rid of Colin Hendry and I was going to take over on a caretaker basis. So I sort of fell into the managing role. I thought the progression would be a progression of first team coach, assistant manager. Would I be a manager? I never knew that. I wasn't sure if I could. I had the credentials, the ruthlessness to be a manager. But obviously when I got offered that job, it was seamless, but it was still difficult at the same time because I'd got used to being in the dressing room with teammates and then taking some of them in the reserves and taking the odd session during the week. But then actually stepping into the manager's chair and then dropping these lads and releasing some of them later on in that season was not easy to do. But ultimately it was about, do I want to be a success as a manager? And I did. And you have to make difficult decisions.
So what, just going through that period of time, obviously in your first couple of years as management at Blackpool, what were some of the biggest things that you kind of took away from that and that you know, really were maybe eye-opening times and moments for you to kind of think about going forward in your career?
Well, I think you've got to, especially when you're in a manager's job, you've got to manage the people above you because ultimately they make the biggest decisions. They keep you on, they allow you to bring the players in to get overnight trips. So dealing with your chief executives and your owners is a massive part of it. I was very fortunate that I took Tony Parks with me, who was been on the first team staff at Blackburn for a number of years, been caretaker there for a long time, and I needed somebody experienced alongside me because as much as I'd played the game for 20 years, it's different when you stood on that touchline in the hot seat and you don't always get every decision right, and you still don't now, but back then when you're 35. I had an older head and calmer figure alongside me that would guide and advise me. And I think he was the biggest help to me at that particular time. And I think also you've learned how the owner was working there when I was playing. But ultimately then, again, going back to man management, what was going to be the best to get a group of players out, the best out of them that were at my disposal.
But yeah, just kind of build on from that. You know, you spent 3 years at Blackpool. As a first team manager or working initially in a coaching capacity, you've then found yourself at one of your other former clubs, Leeds United. How did that move come along?
Well, we'd done well in Blackpool. We got promoted from League One. We made sure we stayed up in the first season in the Championship, which was a massive ask for us to do because we were at the biggest of budgets. The following season, we were around about Christmas in a strong position again. But then I got a call. Gary McAllister had left Leeds and did I want to take over? And Leeds was a club I supported. I played for them. So to go back to Leeds United, even though I was dropping down to League One from the Championship, was a no-brainer for all the reasons mentioned. But ultimately, it was a massive football club that was not in the best position, but ultimately one that I felt that I could get my hands on and really turn around. And it was a call that I never thought I would expect to get, given being a supporter in the first place.
Obviously, a bit of nostalgia there, and obviously, you know, having that personal connection to the club as well. Now, you know, you've gone on to manage a few different clubs in your time, even ending up at Blackpool at one point. What would you say are some of the major things that you've taken away from, you know, working across the different divisions, obviously working in the Championship and obviously League One? Would you say there's major differences between the working in them aside from the, you know, the day-to-day stuff?
Well, I think it's ultimately the players that you've got that you're working with, and are they going to fit into your ethics, your philosophies, your style of play, your beliefs? And ultimately, that group of players are a group of players that you've got to get the best out of. Does the certain group that you've got with you suit playing a 3-5-2, a 4-3-3, 4-4-2? So that was one thing that you got to take on board. You've got to look at the expectancy levels of the supporters and the football club. So there's everybody who supports a football club has got massive aspirations for their club to do as well as it can do, no matter what division it is, no matter how many there are. But if you're going into Sunderland where there's 40,000 supporters and compare that to Blackpool when it was first there and it was 5,000-6,000, then it is a big difference. So you've got to manage the people that are watching the teams. And again, it goes back to what I keep saying is as well, you've got to get the best out of a group of players to help you get results. And would that group of players get run through a brick wall for you? Would they take on board what you're wanting to do? And will they actually represent your beliefs on a day-to-day basis on the training pitch, but ultimately then on a Saturday or a Tuesday when you're playing?
Yeah, you talked there about, you know, buying that, finding a way to buy in that commitment from the players, getting them to really, you know, tune into what you want and, you know, being almost martyrs of that. How would you, or what would you suggest are some of the key things that you've been able to do in your journey that have helped players come around to your way of working and, I guess, really buy into what you're saying?
Well, I think a bit of honesty with them. Look, you're never going to get every player happy when you're making decisions that the player's going to be left out, whether it's a league game or a big playoff game or something like that. But if you can tell them that the truth behind the reasons for it, then that'll certainly help along the way. Getting players to come into work every day and enjoy what they're looking to do. Yes, work hard, which we certainly have done under the teams that I've managed. Every day that we train, I want the high standards, have a bit of a laugh and a joke, but we're there to work. We've got one sole purpose, and that's improving ourselves. Any session that we're doing, whether it's a shooting sessions or an 11-a-side or individual work with the players, then do it to the best of your capabilities. And ultimately, that is going to improve the individual, but then it's going to give the opportunity for the team to be more successful than not.
Mm. So, you know, coming back to your time now, you spent 4 years at Leeds. What would you say is the biggest thing you took away from that? Obviously, like, you know, linking back into it's where you started your playing journey. You had a personal connection, being a supporter of the club as well. What were some of the biggest takeaways from you during that period of time?
Well, I'd like to think that the supporters really enjoyed the ride that we were on, that we give them something to cheer about. We put something back into the football club with and left it in a better position than when I walked in from day one. Give them some real highs, winning at Old Trafford, winning, getting promotion, doing well in the Championship. Of course, you can have some days where it doesn't always go right for you. But I think hopefully they saw an honesty and a passion from myself and my supporters that reflected them. Because, again, supporters want to see a team reflect them. Because people spend a lot of money going to football matches, home and away. And they want players to be doing everything that they can to go and get a result for them. So I think they're the big things that we put back into the club, the heart and soul of it, the passion, the drive, but also the quality as well of the players that we brought in, developed, and our style of football as well.
Right. So, you know, you're talking about, obviously, you know, some of the different experiences. You know, for every, I guess, young coach, aspiring young manager, you know, that ambition of potentially being able to step on the touchline at Old Trafford one day will be a dream for all, I think. What was that like, you know, and obviously managing to secure a victory over United at that time as well?
Yeah, look, it was one of the best days that you can have when, as a League One club, you're managing the team that you love and you're up against one of the biggest rivals. Then to go and actually beat them when they were the existing Premier League champions and we were a League One club, and to come up against one of the most successful managers that British football has seen, was very proud and it makes you feel very sort of lucky that you had a group of players that were desperate to do well, and ultimately you've achieved something. And a lot of these sort of successful times that you have is down to a lot of hard work that you've done at the home and training ground, and you're often preparing for these games. And it's a long journey that when you're a coach, you have to sacrifice a lot of time and hours. But when you get that opportunity to be successful and playoff finals that I've had, it makes it worthwhile.
Brilliant. So just moving forward, then you spent end up for 4 years at Leeds. Obviously, that time came to an end soon after you've ended up at Huddersfield. How did that move come around? You know, because it was quite a I guess a quick transition between the two clubs, obviously having been let go of one and joining another?
Yeah, it was just, I think it was about 2 weeks. I was, I'd left Leeds 3 points off the playoffs. So it was a bit of a surprise that we'd lost our job, but you accept that that's football. And I got a call from Dean Hoyle, who was desperate to take me there. They were in the top four of League One, so it was a surprise that Lee Clark got sacked, but ultimately he felt that I could maybe do one to get Huddersfield over the line and get them promoted, as I'd done at Leeds and Blackpool previously. And ultimately, that's what we ended up doing. We won the playoff final against Sheffield United in a dour 0-0 game, but ultimately a game that had a roller coaster ride of penalties. We went right down to the two goalkeepers taking them. Alex Smithies scores for us and Steve Simonson missed for Sheffield United, and hence you get promoted. So it came about quickly, but ultimately Dean's reasoning for doing it proved successful because I got them promoted as well.
Definitely. So just going to kind of take you back to your own journey a little bit then. You know, you talked earlier about Tony Parks being, almost a key influence in your early days of management. Would you say there's anyone, you know, up till now, you know, you've gone full circle, ended up at Blackpool, and obviously that time's come to an end again. Would you say there's been any major influences beyond Tony Parks that you could maybe talk to and, you know, go into detail around some of the key lessons you've taken from those people?
I think you're just constantly talking to people and gathering advice and experience. I've got a close family and that I'll speak to about things. I work with a bloke who does a lot of psychology stuff with me. But ultimately, it's just speaking to people within the game and just having the odd conversation about things. I've got good friends with like Sean Dyche, Chris Wilder and people like that who are doing really well in the Premier League, to other managers down in League Two. And it's we're all in the same boat. We're all desperate for results. We're all still learning. We're still going on courses. We're still doing many things that are looking to improve us. I've got nearly 700 games, 4 promotions and 15 years. But does it mean to say that I'm not still learning and looking to improve and get better? So I think you're constantly wanting to better yourself. You have got a close network of people that you can turn to when you really need them. And that's what we all do quite frequently.
And over those years, you know, both now, you know, having experienced it as a player and now as a coach, when you now start to think back on some of the experiences you've had, would you say there's been any, I guess, bugbears or pet hates for you when it comes to coaching?
I didn't really enjoy my time as a player at Blackburn under Graham Souness. He didn't sign me, but then there's a group of players that he didn't really want to pick, so we were more or less outcasted and trained with a reserve team coach. And I've never really wanted to do that to players, because I wanted players to be treated how I wanted to be treated. Yes, sometimes you're doing an 11-a-side and you've got 24 players, so two are not going to be doing any work in terms of that actual body. But at least if they're with you most of that journey, then that's fine. But it was a period where I just didn't understand or reason why you couldn't incorporate the other lads into what you were doing. So I think that was something that I didn't want to have a group of players at any particular time when I was a manager to leave and have them in a different group and feel not part of what we're trying to do, even though they were maybe not part of your plans, but you still kept them part of it as well.
Definitely. You're kind of just building on that, and you're talking there about that inclusivity. If you just go on a bit more detail in around the fundamentals of your own coaching philosophy then.
Yeah, look, I think I've always, as I mentioned before, a lot of my philosophies, beliefs and ideas really represent what I wanted to do and how I was as a player. That I was a real honest player who worked hard, had a bit of ability because I must have had some to play in the Championship and the Premier League like I did, and Europe at times, a few times. But it was basically that honesty that I would give everything every time I put that shirt on. Look, I was never going to... Every player, when they go out onto the pitch, are never going to be played 100% in terms of with the ball, because there's never occasion in a game where you're not going to give it away. But one bit of advice that somebody gave me was that you can never have a bad game without the ball. Ultimately, that means running around and tackling and chasing and stopping the opposition for playing. Yes, you can have a bad day giving the ball away, but that's when you've got to be mentally strong to get through that side of it, but it doesn't stop you from running around. And I wanted my teams to reflect that and honesty about them, that they could see a team working hard and hopefully somewhere down the line entertaining as well.
So we take you back to your time at Huddersfield. You've spent just over a year at Huddersfield before moving on to Preston North End. Now, another historic club, Preston North End. How did that move come around? Is there a pattern and a trend that you're starting to see, in between the clubs here, in that very different clubs?
Yeah, look, I was out of work for 2 weeks and I knew Peter Ridsdale from when I was young pro at Leeds. He was on the board and he said, look, would you come to Preston? And Preston were in the bottom six of League One, and it was a tough decision to make, because if you didn't get it right in February to the end of the season, the team could have been in League Two, and I didn't want to do that. But I looked at that, the club, again, looking at the people who are running it, and could you survive that first season to make sure they didn't go down? But ultimately then is a platform to build off and make the club bigger and stronger again. And certainly Preston was a club that I felt I could do that with my staff. And so we did the first year season and stayed up. And you could see that there was a football club, fine tradition and history. Fan base had just dwindled a little bit because it wasn't being successful. But you only had to get it going and you knew that supporters would come back again. And hence, we survived, as I said. And then the second season, we got to the playoff semi-final. And then the third year we got, which we lost to Rotherham, and then the following season got promoted in the playoffs again. So I think it's sometimes, like I mentioned earlier, looking at clubs and where they are and where they could be if it went wrong, but also I was more on the positive side, glass half full, that, right, it's reached a level now, you could be the one to bring them back to where they want to get to.
Definitely. What would you say, obviously some of the quite a big challenge, obviously, moving into a League One club who are maybe trying to steer away from relegation into League Two. What would you say were some of the biggest things that you felt you needed to do at that time to make sure that the players were on board and that things were being steered in the right way, if that makes sense?
Yeah, well, when I looked at the football club before I took the job, there was a disconnection between the previous manager and the supporters, and ultimately speaking to one or two of the players as well, getting people to do it on my behalf, finding out what was not making that football club successful or ticking and moving in the right direction. And it was that there was this disconnection and bit of unhappiness amongst the whole place.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Ultimately, it was about going in and getting a smile on the players' faces and enjoying the football again, supporters getting back on side. And if you can do that, getting players who are happy, performing, supporters happy, then you're only going to be moving in one direction and that's up. So it was about the man management skills that we touched on, and then reassessing the group in the summer to think where you can go with the future with new players or existing players.
Definitely. Let's see, coming on from Preston North End, moving into Sunderland, obviously trying to fight for a way back into the Premier League after David Moyes sacked there. What did you find were some of the biggest challenges when you went into Sunderland? Because obviously when Moyes was in charge, there was a lot of people would argue quality players there, but maybe just Sunderland couldn't get the best out of them for one reason or another.
Yeah, look, I think go back to when I left Preston. I'd been there 4.5 years and we finished 11th in the Championship, 2 years on the trot, and with a bottom three budget. I had a group of players that were outstanding, young talents that was coming through, would work, give everything for the shirt. But ultimately, really enjoyed working with them. But and I had opportunities to leave to go to the clubs, but I never wanted to do that because I had a good group and enjoyed the football club, the supporters. But when a club of the size of Sunderland, an ex-Premier League club, come knocking, then it's sometimes too hard a decision to turn down. So I decided to go. I knew that it was obviously a club that had a lot of negativity over a number of years. But I believed in myself that I could be the one that would and could turn it around and get it back up, whether it's the first year or the second year, back to the Premier League. So that's the reasoning for doing it. Again, you do your due diligence on football clubs, try and work out who the good people are, who the characters are, what's the negatives, what are the positives. But sometimes you look at all them factors from the outside and you don't actually realise until you get in the inside how deep some of the negative signs, how deep-rooted they are. And I think that was the problem at Sunderland. It was a lot of negativity from supporters of what had happened over the previous few seasons, to ultimately players that didn't want to be there, thought they were too good to be there, that had lost the drive and a hunger to go and give everything for the shirt, because whether that's through just a football desire or financial aspect, that these lads had earned a lot of money in the Premier League and didn't really accept that they were Championship players. And that's what the biggest task that we had. And you have to then, when you analyse them problems, you've got to try and get rid of them, a few, as many as you can, and bring new ones in. But there wasn't the money available in the first place. We brought in 40, 50 million pounds of transfer sales in that August window and brought 12 new players in for 1.2. So you can see the discrepancies between the money of ins and outs. And then you need time to be able to change things around. And time is a massive thing for any coach, that you new ideas, beliefs, new group of players, that you need that. And ultimately, I didn't get that, which led to my sacking in November. But then Chris Coleman came in and it was the same for Chris. He had the same problems that I had, that he couldn't get a group going. And ultimately, that's why the club got relegated. And sometimes you question yourself as a manager, you analyse yourself, good times and bad times. But ultimately, I thought, well, I couldn't do much more than I've tried to do. And ultimately, when Chris wasn't able to keep the team up in the Championship, it proved that it was a bigger problem than the managers, really.
Just talking to that, then, you know, that in itself, when you've got players who maybe been used to or had a history of playing in the Premier League, going down to the Championship, naturally, some of them might feel, yeah, they're too good for this level or whatnot. But you might just talk to this, maybe some of the challenges that did present for you, and I guess the types of resistance you might have had then in that, because a lot of coaches will probably say that players as well as coaches both have egos. Now, for a player who's been maybe playing in the Premier League for a large part of their careers and all of a sudden has gone down into the Championship, there might be a very big element of that which will come back to the egos. How do you manage that? What are some of the strategies that you've conjured up throughout your career?
Well, you just try and you try to get to know the individual, what makes him tick, what try and get a relationship with him, that try and get that out of him, that desire to want to be to get going again and help the football club out and help his career. But if that doesn't come, if you can't get that from, it has to come from within that particular player. And if that isn't going to happen, then the only way that you can really change that mindset around is probably moving the players on. But ultimately, when players are on big money and nobody else really wants to pay the money, as in fees for them and the wages, it's very, very difficult. You're stuck in a very difficult position. You keep trying to find different ways by getting them on board. But it's an inner desire, that an attitude and commitment that make the real top players the players that they are, to players that are just journeymen or mercenaries.
So just to build on that then, what would you say is one of the biggest challenges, or has been the biggest challenge of your journey so far? And if it's something you've been able to, then great. How have you gone about dealing with that?
Well, I think the Sunderland one was a massive challenge of all the things that we've spoke about on and off the pitch. Time is what you need. You finished in August, the window, and then you ultimately then wait for January to come round, and you then want to change that group of players around or even get more out. But ultimately, when you're not given that time, it's very more difficult. So I was only there 4 months or so, 5 months. So to get any success from it was obviously going to be very difficult. I think on another personal, when I look on my journey as a manager, that a position where we've been struggling or something has gone wrong, then to regather again, was when I was at Preston. We lost the last game of the season to Colchester to get automatic promotion. Players were really down on the bus going back, and I had to use my man management skills to get the players up again and ready for the Thursday night to then play in a semi-finals to get into the Championship, which we managed to do through many different reasons. But then also then, the club had never been promoted in 10 attempts at the playoffs. So you have to deal with all that sort of negativity around, your positive energy, your positive thoughts, your positive process reflects on the players, supporters, and ultimately we won 4-0 in a playoff final. So from suffering the disappointment of losing last game of the season to suddenly winning a playoff semi-final 4-0 on aggregate and then winning the final 4-0 is up there with one of the biggest sort of achievements that I've had.
Brilliant. And you touched on earlier, you know, about I guess that continuous professional development, you know, keep learning, being around other coaches, attending courses. Just kind of to follow up on that then, you know, what would you say is something that helps you stay inspired and keep motivated to be your best?
To prove people wrong sometimes when you lose your job and you've had a desire because to be successful, because most of my career up to the last couple of jobs has been on a real upward curve. Four clubs I had, four promotions I had. So somewhere down the line, it's obviously going to not continue like that. But ultimately, it's how you have to keep progressing as a coach, manager, and a desire to be successful. If you haven't got a drive and hunger for football, then you're not going to be a manager because it's so time consuming, not just the match days on a Saturday, Tuesday, it's your training sessions, all the media stuff, your meetings with chief executives, agents. It takes over your life, but it's something that I've loved doing and carry on doing. And even when you are out of work, you go to, when you're allowed to because of the COVID, you go to watch other clubs train. So like when I was in between jobs after leaving Sunderland, I went up to Newcastle to see Rafa. I went into Burnley, went to Paris Saint-Germain, went to Norway, just to see different coaches, different ideas, just to get out and about and just to make sure that you're educating yourself and you're keeping yourself out there with people that you know and improving yourself.
So, you know, you talked there about, you know, leaving Sunderland. You've now left Sunderland, spent a very brief stint at Bradford City. How did that come about and why was that so brief to start with?
Well, I had plenty of opportunities to go to other clubs as soon as I left Sunderland in November, I think it was. But I had 4 or 5 months of just doing different things because I'd gone more or less continuous, as you can tell, my journey from playing straight into management and then couple of jobs where you got sacked, you're only out of work for 2 weeks. I had a few months off to give myself a recharge, my batteries a little bit, and then just felt that Bradford were in the top six of League One. Could I go there and get another promotion? Yeah, I thought that. But again, probably didn't do my due diligence of the people running the club, because there's a lot of, again, disconnection and negativity around it from supporters to some German owners that were there. And they wanted me to sign a 3-year deal. I said, I'll sign it till the end of the season, February to the end of the season, with a view to extending it from then in my favour. But I could just sense it was, the club was on a downward spiral, and it was very, with the owners and the supporters being disconnected, it was going to be very difficult to him to get it going. And hence that season, that summer I left, the following season they got relegated, and I could see the signs when I was there actually came through to fruition, which wasn't nice for the supporters in the football club, but that was a decision that I made, and I don't regret making it.
And you talked there about doing the due diligence before you going into a club. What kind of things are you referring to on that note?
Well, you look at your players, you've got sort of how, what training facilities, what staff they've got behind, how honest, how open, are you going to get on with the chief executives, the owners, what's happened in the past with the football club? Has it been a little blip, or is it a downward spiral all for a long time? So many, many different things. I speak to you sometimes, maybe speak to players that were there the previous season, or maybe a previous coach was there, or somebody who maybe knows somebody. Just a little bit of research, really, to give you a bit more attention to detail of what you're going into.
Right, and you know, just to kind of talk on it, you know, just delve a little bit deeper. Then, when you're now getting being approached by these clubs, obviously some of these situations require you potentially to have an interview. What are some of the things that you think are important when going into those situations?
Well, I think when you're speaking to the people and the clubs that you're going into them, you need reassurances that you're going to be able to give yourself the best tools and opportunity to make that club successful. And that's not easy, because some people then will say one thing, but then ultimately sometimes change their mind or have a different viewpoint once you've signed your contract. And that's what you've got to be very careful and try and get that honesty between and relationship with the people above. And that's why I've said earlier that managing the people above you is so important, that you've got the respect for each other and you work together, and not in different directions. So you look at it, and you're obviously wanting to do as much as you can in terms of, can we improve this department? Can we do this? Can we do that? It's all about sort of putting all the pieces of the jigsaw together, not necessarily overnight, but have a long-term view of planning things, which is not that easy in this modern-day football, because of people don't give you time that you used to do.
And just kind of build on that then, is there any particular things that you've always got on your hit list of questions to ask when you're going into those interview situations?
I think you will do. I think in terms of one thing that I've been very clear on when I've been going into new clubs, is that I've always liked at least one person who's worked with me, because they know how I work, and I know how they work. And it's been very successful with a certain group of individuals that have been with me through a lot of the clubs where I've been successful. So I think enjoy working with certain people. I've not got an entourage of 6-8 people that you have to take with you, because that's very difficult financially for clubs to do that. But a little bit of having somebody alongside you that will get the best out of you and you will them.
And just, you know, just to kind of build on that then, is it a particular requirement for you which department the member of staff works in, or is it always tend to be for you your assistant coach?
Yeah, it's probably more the assistant first team coach, really, that I take with me. And it's not always the same person. I've had a couple of lads who've been my assistant, or the other one was a first team coach, then came with me to another club as assistant manager. So depending on sort of budgets and what football clubs you're at and where they are, sometimes maybe when you've left another football club, sometimes they've moved on to another job in the meantime and they can't come with you. So it's really that sort of that closeness and that relationship you have with an assistant manager, that he will tell you if he thinks you're making the wrong decision with a training session, dropping a player, picking a player, recruitment or whatever, because of that brutal honesty that you need from assistant manager. You don't want somebody that's going to be just saying yes all the time. So I think if you can, you have that one, it's a massive part for you, because you have to trust the people who are working with you. And if you're going into a club with new, with existing staff there, then you, it takes a little bit longer to get their trust and you and them to trust you as well.
Definitely. Interesting. Just we started to kind of wind down now. I just wanted to ask, you know, going back to your journey now, going back to the start of your coaching journey, you know, obviously transitioning from a player into a coach, knowing what you know now, almost, you know, was it almost 15 years on now? What is there anything that you'd, any messages that you'd want to give yourself when you were starting that coaching journey back then, if you had the opportunity to go back?
I think when I look back, I did a lot of the things that I would probably do now in terms of, I'm a big believer, as I said there, that if you're a first-time manager going into a new club, get somebody alongside you that's been there and done it as well to advise you, because it is, you might think you know everything and you can watch every game that's on the TV, you can do the sessions after sessions, but to have somebody alongside you that, that will can advise you, guide you, I think is really, really important for somebody. And I think that, and obviously I did that with Tony Parks, so I think that was, I was really pleased that I did that, because if I hadn't done that, then my journey would have maybe could have been a lot shorter and certainly not as successful. There's going to be certain situations that you're thinking, well, could I have handled a little bit different? There's going to be, without a shadow of a doubt, but I'm not quite sure off the top of my head that there's too many that that I can remember, because I've had Tony alongside me to help me along the way with them.
Mm. And then just to kind of, you know, build on that then, if you had 60 seconds now to leave our listeners with one golden nugget on their journeys, what would that be?
Basically, to work hard, be like a sponge, always want to keep improving, do as many courses that you can, whether it's from watching Guardiola masterclass, a Klopp masterclass, technically, tactically, but also then watching a documentary on another coach in another industry, how their man management skills might work and how what makes them tick, their drive, their enthusiasm. Just keep learning all the time, but enjoy it as well, because if you get the opportunity to be a coach at a level, but ultimately a coach at a level that of in the EFL or the Premier League, then you people will be desperate to change places with you because of that opportunity. Everybody wants to play at the highest level professionally and ultimately to coach and manage as well. So grasp that opportunity, work extremely hard. But ultimately as well, probably the biggest thing that I've done throughout my career, maybe as well as a player, is that I've never got too carried away with success and never too down when we've had some negative results. You're never going to go through that life of success after success. So don't be swinging from a chandelier with a bottle of champagne and a big cigar whereas when you're doing well. But ultimately, on the other aspect, don't be too down. And because if you are, players will see that and that will have an effect on them. So try and be very level-headed as much as you can do.
Brilliant. And, you know, you're currently not at a club. What would you say is the next step for you then?
Well, it's going to be waiting for an opportunity. Unfortunately, in our line of work, is that you're waiting for somebody's misfortune of losing their job to allow you the opportunity to come back into it. So I've got hunger, desire, as much as I had when I first started 15 years ago. I want to add to my nearly 700 games I've got and promotions that I've had. I want to go back. I've got to wait for that opportunity. And maybe then prove one or two people wrong that the reasons why they got sacked at Blackpool recently. So I've got a real, I've always had a philosophy of wanting to prove people wrong to a certain degree when it's not worked out well, when even as a player. But ultimately that inner desire myself that I know I'm good and I want to keep improving and be successful and be looked on and something in the past of somebody that had a good career.
Brilliant. And just kind of, you know, on that final note then, you know, still very, I guess, in the middle of your, I guess, your coaching journey, your managerial journey. When you do eventually get to the end of that journey and you call it time on that, what would you want your legacy to be?
Well, hopefully a successful one, which even if I finish now, I think I would class my managing career as a success. That to have four promotions, I don't think anybody else has managed that in League One, and to have managed Leeds United and had some great results, I can look back that I've had a successful career. But ultimately, I want to be judged as a person that people enjoyed working with me, they trusted me, thought I was an honest bloke, approachable, that would tell him as it is at certain times. So yeah, an honest, down-to-earth person who give his all for every football club that he worked at.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favourite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.